afternoon. Ready to call our third case for the day, 07-AP-1378-CR State v. Jeremichael James Carroll. Arguing on behalf of Mr. Carroll is Michael Gould, Assistant State Public Defender. Mr. Gould.
Good afternoon. I am Michael Gould, the attorney for the petitioner Jeremichael Carroll. This case involves the warrantless search of a cell phone photo gallery and the interception of a call to that same cell phone. Hundreds of millions of Americans carry cell phones. And these cell phones are not just phones anymore, but they are mini computers that can send, receive, and store text and voice messages and photographs, even videos. Newer models of cell phones, such as iPhones and BlackBerries, are just compact versions of laptop computers. They have many gigabytes of memory, and they can store and retrieve the same kind of documents and media that can be stored on a laptop computer, making these devices the digital equipment of the owner's home, capable of holding a warehouse of private information. The millions of Americans who own cell phones have a reasonable expectation in the privacy of the information that is stored on their cell phones and in the privacy of their incoming communications. In this case, a police detective searched the memory of Mr. Carroll's cell phone and intercepted a phone call that was intended for Mr. Carroll. Police officers need guidance as to how to proceed when they encounter a cell phone or a laptop during the course of a traffic stop or an arrest. To provide that guidance, this court should hold that, in the absence of any exigent circumstances, a warrant is required before the police can search the memory of any device that contains electronic information.
Counsel, do you think it is an exigent circumstance that someone from a remote location can affect the contents of a cell phone, delete things, delete the memory card, impact voicemail messages?
It might be. I'm not aware of that capability, but certainly with the advance of technology, that capability, I mean, I'm not aware of anybody that's able to access my cell phone and delete stuff, but certainly that, if there's the idea that it could happen, it might be able to happen at some time in the future, and that could potentially be an exigent circumstance. I don't believe that that's the case in this case, but it's certainly worth thinking about.
Well, let's get back to some basics before we get into the cell phone per se. Was there an arrest here?
It is my contention that there was no arrest. There was certainly probable cause to arrest Mr. Carroll for traffic violations, and there was perhaps reasonable suspicion based on the little photograph that's in the screen of the thing to think that he might have been smoking marijuana at some time in the past.
Isn't there reasonable suspicion or probable cause that he was out of a house that they were had under surveillance because of an armed robbery?
Well, the record is a little bare of why they thought that house was connected with the armed robbery. Mr. Carroll visited the house briefly and then left, and they were following him, but there's nothing in the record that indicates that he had anything to do with that armed robbery.
Weren't they suspicious that he was a drug dealer?
Well, before they saw the photographs in the photo gallery, I don't think they had a reasonable suspicion that he was a drug dealer. They had a reasonable suspicion that he was a drug user. He's seen smoking the marijuana, but there's no indicia that he was involved in drug dealing. They did not find any drugs on his person or in the car. At least the record doesn't indicate that. They didn't find any large amounts of cash, which is frequently associated with drug dealing. I would say there's not even any reasonable suspicion that he's drug dealing. There's certainly reasonable suspicion that he's a pot.
Well, if he wasn't arrested, he was detained, wasn't he?
He was detained, and the phone itself was seized and secure. He was not in a position to access the phone while he was handcuffed in the back of the squad car.
All right, what can you do to search somebody when they're detained?
Well, if he's merely detained, I mean, you know, he could, if there's a reasonable suspicion that he was armed, and I'm not going to, I don't think that's important for this case, but given that there was an armed robbery involved, I would say that it probably was not unreasonable to frisk him. But once they had discovered the cell phone, because of the substantial privacy interests involved, there's no exigency that requires, that allows them to search the memory of the cell phone and to intercept phone communications directed to him. Because those are areas where there's substantial privacy interest and there's no exigency. If they have probable cause to think that the cell phone contains evidence of a crime, they can get a warrant. And in fact, they later did get a warrant in this case.
But if they thought it had evidence of a crime, could they search it without a warrant?
The cell phone itself, no. I would say no. I would concede that if the cell phone was ringing and they had independent probable cause that he was a drug dealer as opposed to just simply a drug user, then they could answer the phone. That De La Paz decision establishes that.
And he was not under arrest.
Even though he was not under arrest, yes.
Was he ever?
I don't think that the arrest in the present state is as important as it may have been before the Gant decision was issued, because I think that represents a significant curtailment of the pushing of the envelope that had occurred as a result of Belton and Thornton. So I would say that because of that, the arrest itself isn't as significant. But regardless of whether he's under arrest or not, even if he is under arrest, they can't search the cell phone without a warrant because they can get a warrant, and because they can seize the phone, that decision is something that should be left to a neutral and detached magistrate.
So you agree they could have, based on the photo in plain view on the phone, seized the phone and go apply for a warrant?
They can apply for a warrant, whether it's issued or not. But they need to apply for a warrant because there's no, the search incident to arrest rationale rests on two prongs: officer safety and the need to prevent destruction of evidence. And neither of those was in effect here. He was secured in the back of the squad car. And the police can hold on to the phone pending issuance of the warrant so that he can't touch it to try to delete anything. And they did go and get a warrant eventually. It's just that they did the search. In effect, they did the search and got the warrant later. They didn't really find anything new as a result of obtaining the warrant. They had already looked in the photo gallery.
So what exact evidence do you want suppressed?
The images that are in the photo gallery, which are the basis for the charge of felon possession of a firearm, because there's photographs of Mr. Carroll holding a firearm.
Drug call. They intercepted a call. It appears that call could be interpreted as an attempt to buy drugs from your client, right?
Yes.
You want that suppressed?
Well, I think it should be suppressed. I don't think it's that important because they didn't charge him with any drug offenses, and that by itself wouldn't have been enough to convict him, so it's not that important. But it still should be suppressed because they did not have probable cause to believe that he was a drug dealer at the time that he made the call. The warrant affidavit indicates that a number of calls came in. They didn't answer all of them, and although the timing is a little fuzzy in the record, It seems possible, if not probable, that the decision to answer the phone call was prompted by what he had already seen in the photo gallery, which would have led him to believe, if he had accessed it legally, that Mr. Carroll was dealing drugs given the photographs in the photo gallery.
Counsel, what if, my understanding is that this phone showed a picture of him smoking a blunt when they picked it up, and the officer took that to mean that he was smoking marijuana. Apparently, when this phone was presented during one court hearing, and I read a couple transcripts, I can't tell you which one, when this phone picture initially came up on the phone, there was something about the big boss or something that was in letters above it that indicated someone that was involved in drug dealing, but that kind of faded away after the picture was up for a while, and you left with kind of like a screensaver,
right,
which was really just him smoking this this blunt. If in fact all of that had been on the phone, the words as well as just the picture, would that change your analysis of the issue at all?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because, well, first of all, when they were looking at the phone, this stuff came out. The phone was already in the open position.
Yes, that's what I understand.
And when the officer picked it up, he said he saw the photograph of the smoking of the purported blunt, and he didn't say anything about seeing the big boss player. Even if he had, I'm not sure what you can do. There was no testimony that phrase, which, I mean, maybe it means he's some player in some kind of whatever, but I don't know what to interpret that. I don't think it makes that much difference.
Okay.
And I also don't think that even if it does provide probable, if it did, for the sake of argument, provide probable cause, that's only probable cause that he's a drug user. I mean, if he was found on the street smoking a blunt and arrested, and it was in fact a blunt, and his phone rang, would it be okay for the officer to answer? I really would say no, because he's a drug user. They don't have any reason to believe that. I mean, drug users tend to call the dealers when they want more drugs, not the other way around. And so it's the fact that he's receiving an incoming call, it could be anything. It could be his mom, it could be his sister, it could be anyone. It wouldn't necessarily be a drug dealer. And in fact, the officer did not answer every phone call. He answered one of many phone calls. We don't know when in the sequence that happened.
Does it matter that there was probable cause to arrest him for civil traffic violation? And when we determine what they can search?
There certainly was probable cause, but I would say that it doesn't really matter. I mean, to the question of arrest, yes, if they normally, those people are not arrested for that type of violation, and the trial court was very skeptical about that. But even so, that does not, you're not going to have any evidence of a, it's very unlikely that they would find evidence of traffic violations to support the traffic violations. I mean, they had him. He was speeding for the traffic violation, and they knew his license was suspended. They didn't need any more evidence of traffic violations, and it's very unlikely that they would find anything on the phone that relates to traffic violations.
Counsel, what if the picture on the front of the phone was him holding a .45?
Well, that
they searched the phone then? Because he's a felon, so we know.
He's a felon. Well, that's evidence of a crime. Mm-hmm. But I would still say that they need a warrant. Now, they probably would easily get the warrant if they had that, because that's evidence of a felony offense as opposed to the misdemeanor offense. But I would still say that that's still a decision that requires a neutral and detached magistrate, because there's no exigency of either officer safety or the chance that evidence could be destroyed.
Thank you.
If we don't put a label of arrest on this situation, what is the consequence of that?
Well, the label of arrest gets you to whether there's the search incident to arrest, and then the follow-up question would be, is the search of a cell phone something that is permitted by a search incident to arrest? And the state has cited a case called Finley that says, yeah, you can do that. So that's why the label is important, or at least was perhaps more important before the Gantt decision, because the Finley case is sort of the pushing the envelope of allowing very wide-ranging searches as a result of an arrest. I think that the Gantt decision signals a retrenchment of that, or trying to put a stop to what were perceived as excesses that had been the result of the Belton decision. And so I think the label is probably less important now than it was, before April when Gantt was decided.
Gantt was an automobile search, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Maybe that's different than a search of a person and a search of a cell phone. Maybe Gant just deals with autos.
But I think that Gant also deals with a sort of going back to what are the general principles that underlie why are we allowing these searches incident to arrest. And that, those two main concerns, because I mean this is an exception to the warrant requirement, are officer safety, which is of course extremely important, and you know you're going to err on the side of caution with officer safety and the potential destruction of evidence. But if Detective Belsha is holding on to the cell phone, it's not, you know, there's nothing unsafe about a cell phone, and because Mr. Carroll.
Well, maybe this photo of the alleged smoking the marijuana, maybe that's plain view if the phone was in open position.
Well, sure, the photograph itself is in plain view. There's no dispute about that. The question is, do we get to look at the other photographs which require pushing buttons and going into inside the phone?
That's why I'm trying to pin you down to exactly what it is that you're objecting to for suppression. So if it's an open position and there's a picture there.
Right, and a screensaver on a laptop, there's no problem with that because the person has brought it up and it's in plain view.
So it's the manipulating
Cell
phone to get other photos. That is what should be suppressed.
Correct.
Counsel, how would your proposed holding in this case be affected, if at all, if Mr. Carroll's service provider had made available to him a poison pill, or in other words, a remote means by which the contents of the cell phone could have been restored to factory condition? Something that might be of interest to a common user of a cell phone who may lose it, or it might be stolen.
Well, that I haven't really considered that. I mean, that certainly is something that, I mean, assuming he has a way to do that. Now, if he's handcuffed, I don't know how he's going to be able to do that now.
Well, it could be done by a confederate, as has been noted in some of the case law supporting search of the phone logs, that a confederate, knowing of his detention, could do it for him.
Well, that's certainly a potential wrinkle on the case that you know awaits another thing, and it's certainly an important consideration. I don't think there's anything that's in this case that indicates that that's potentially possible. Certainly in the future, with that kind of thing, there. But I would say it's at the level of technology that was possessed in this case, where there doesn't seem to be any way for anyone to interfere, and there's no indication that anybody else knew that the cell phone was in police custody. I think that's something that certainly may come up in the future, but since it's not the case today, I have no opinion on that.
Counselor, you talked about the reasonable expectation of privacy, and that's something I want to look at a little bit more. When you have a cell phone, and I've had one for a long time. The one I have now is kind of complicated. But for years, even when I had the simplest ones, you can put a password in your cell phone so that even when you want to use it, you push the button, you enter the password, and then your phone clears and you can use it. Apparently, this phone had no restrictions on use, so anybody that picked it up could use it or at least peruse it. Does that factor, or should that factor, affect our view of what his reasonable expectation of privacy was?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I think if you think of a password as an analogous to a lock, like you can lock something, you know, if I don't lock my house, I still have a reasonable expectation of privacy that police aren't going to go in there.
Well,
and if I don't
different.
Lock my trunk, or my briefcase, the fact that I can add additional protections to preserve my privacy doesn't mean that I don't have privacy in like a file folder or something where I haven't done that. I'm sure that's an additional indicia that this is something that the person wants to remain private. And indeed, you can put locks. I have a lock on my cell phone, which I use after this case.
That's right, UIM insurance. We all go get UIM insurance after these cases.
But the people taking additional steps to safeguard the privacy of their information just serves to highlight that this is stuff that, a lot of stuff that's on there is stuff that people want to keep private, and I guess the best way they keep it private is they just hang on to it, but they don't have any way to protect it if the police seize their phone.
Okay, thank you. Counsel, the test regarding arrest generally is what a reasonable person think that they're not able to freely leave. Isn't that something like that? I'm paraphrasing it. I think it's whether a reasonable person in the defendant's position would have considered himself or herself to be in custody given the degree of restraint, and then you define what custody is, and that is the freedom to leave. It seems to me that a person who is put in the back seat of a squad car, handcuffed, would at least pause. And in reality, I think a person put in the back seat of a squad car, handcuffed, would not think that they are free to leave.
Well, certainly, but I mean, we allow like limited detention for investigative purposes, and there are a number of cases where people who were found were handcuffed in the back of the squad car were considered not to be under arrest. You know, the problem is the goalposts tend to move depending on, you know, if we were...
Facts of the case, but yes, I know that one case here for 2 hours.
Right, 2 hours, and I mean, if we were talking about a Miranda thing where he had been asked a question and confessed, I would probably be arguing the other side, and he'd be sitting, over there. That's a tough question, and maybe the toughest question in the case. I would say that I think that becomes a little easier in light of the Gantt decision because, you know, obviously it's in Mr. Carroll's interest to say that he's not under arrest, and you can't do a search incident to arrest, given the previous sort of regime where the courts were really pushing the envelope of that search incident to arrest exception far beyond the initial two-pronged rationales that were permitted in Kimmel and in Robinson. And now that that has seems to have been halted in its tracks, I think that's perhaps less significant now. And regardless of whether he's under arrest or not, the police still should have to get a warrant to search his cell phone because there's no exigency, and they need probable cause to believe that the phone is going to have criminal activity to answer the phone. I mean, answering the phone is not the standard shouldn't necessarily be as strict because there is a possibility that evidence could be lost if they don't answer the phone. I'm not sure if that was very helpful, but I see the issue as less important in the wake of the Gantt decision.
A lot of the cases that have come to the court on whether the person's under arrest, it's usually the state that doesn't want him on arrest because they don't want to avoid the fact that Miranda wasn't given and miscellaneous assortment of matters. But in this case, the state's supporting arrest, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And we get numbers of cases that say, put them in a locked car. Was this car locked, or don't you know?
We don't know. But, I mean, he was in handcuffs, so it's very unlikely he would have been able to leave.
Just walk off. Mm-hmm.
If this were an arrest, would the state be able to, in terms of interpreting their position, would they be able to open the cell phone? No pictures, just open it and go through it?
I would say no. If it was in the closed position, opening it constitutes a search. I mean, even minimal manipulation.
It's not something that, it wouldn't be in plain view. It would require flipping the phone open to see that blunt picture. So I would say yes, they couldn't open it.
But going
involves doing something to sort of open, there's the closed container analogy, I prefer the letter analogy. It's like opening a letter. Because even if you flip it open, you're going to obtain information. Now, he had it in the open position, maybe he was calling somebody when he was being pursued, but he dropped it. It's open, it's in plain view, there's no problem with his looking at that first picture. It's just when he starts to push buttons to get into, to open the letter, as it were, to see other information that isn't in plain view, that becomes problematic. I see that my time has expired.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Assistant Attorney General James Finemuth, representing the state of Wisconsin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. I am Assistant Attorney General James Finemuth, representing the state of Wisconsin. At issue in this case is the admissibility of a photo contained on Defendant Carroll's cell phone showing him in possession of a semi-automatic handgun. The state asks this court to conclude that Milwaukee police, in the person of Detective Belsha, lawfully discovered this firearm photo in either of two equally valid ways. First, pursuant to execution of a valid search warrant based on information that while the detective lawfully possessed the cell phone, he lawfully answered a call on the cell phone pretending to be Carroll and heard the caller order cocaine from Carroll. That's the first rationale in a nutshell. The second is the search incident to arrest rationale, and before articulating how that applies to Carroll, I'd like to articulate what the state believes should be the proper search incident to arrest holding or principle in cell phone situations. That is, at a minimum, police should be permitted to conduct a warrantless search of a cell phone found in a vehicle or on the person of one who has been lawfully arrested, incidental to that person's arrest when the following factors are present. Lawful arrest. Second, the search of the cell phone would be reasonably related to a crime of arrest or to a crime for which the police have probable cause to arrest. That's distilled basically from Arizona versus Gantt, and in particular Justice Scalia's concurrence. And the third factor, the search must be done contemporaneously with the person's actual arrest. This second rationale, when you apply it to the present case, means that Carroll was lawfully arrested either for traffic violations and or possession of marijuana, and when the detective possessed probable cause to believe that Carroll had committed the crime of marijuana possession, and the detective had reason to believe the cell phone may contain evidence of illegal drug activity beyond the photo of him smoking of Carroll smoking a marijuana blunt that the detective saw in plain view.
I need to ask you this. Lawfully arrested for traffic violation, I've got that. The 60 miles per hour in a residential zone, operating while suspended, that sort of thing. How is there an arrest for possession of marijuana based upon a picture where you have no idea what the jurisdiction might be and you could not prove it's marijuana? I mean, you can prove it might look like it is, but I mean, how do you get to that next step? And how would they even prove the most fundamental jurisdictional requirement?
Well, I think it's not just the photo that was in plain view of the smoking blunt, but it's on a cell phone. The detective in his search warrant affidavit articulates that.
I get the search warrant. I thought you were saying he was lawfully arrested for a traffic violation and for marijuana possession before they went through the cell phone.
Correct.
How was he lawfully arrested for marijuana, possession of marijuana?
Right.
How was he lawfully arrested for that before they go through the cell phone? Based on the one picture in plain view.
And it isn't just the picture is what I was getting at.
Okay.
It's the photo on the cell phone, plus the fact that it's a cell phone and the detective saying that And he articulates this in the warrant affidavit that he knows from experience that drug traffickers, not just users, but traffickers, will typically personalize their cell phones with photos of their involvement in drug activity. So you've got a cell phone, which is a tool of the drug trade. You've got a picture, a photo of the defendant smoking marijuana. And you've got the detective's experience that this type of use of photos on cell phones is typical of drug traffickers.
Did he testify how many experiences he had?
I'm sorry?
Did he testify as to how many drug traffickers he had come into contact that had personalized cell phones?
He did not.
Did he testify as to research studies available that say that?
He did not.
He just said it.
This is contained in his affidavit is where he says this.
I just need to be clear on this. You're saying he was sitting in the back of a car, handcuffed, because he's arrested for possession of marijuana. The crime, possession of a controlled substance.
The officer never articulated a basis for arrest. He never said you're under arrest for this particular offense. I'm suggesting that when you're talking about, and this goes now to the incident to arrest, I mean, it's not germane, at least under the state's theory, to the search warrant analysis. But
right.
I want to put that aside. To the search incident to arrest, he had, as I just articulated, probable cause to arrest for the speeding, driving without a license, and I suggest marijuana possession. But if you disagree that he didn't have probable cause for the marijuana possession to arrest, I'm suggesting that under the proposal that or principle that I've articulated, he had probable cause to believe that the cell phone would contain drug activity information.
Okay, so assume that I follow you there. Wouldn't the option be for him to seize the cell phone and go get a warrant?
Sure, he did do that, but I'm also saying that
so
he didn't have to do that because under the circumstances of this, where you had this photo on the cell phone and given all this other information that, or this experience that he has, it's reasonable. As long as you have probable cause to believe that this cell phone is, now we're talking about a container only in the sense that it's a repository of evidence of illegal drug activity, and probable cause to believe that there could be evidence on that cell phone. You've got one photo already. There's reason to suspect that, like I say, based on this other...
Is there an exigency? Was there anything in the record as to why you couldn't just wait and get the warrant and go through it then? Is there anything?
I'm suggesting that for search incident to arrest analysis, given this, you don't need the exigency under that analysis.
And here's where you start to make me wonder a little bit. Assume he only has the ability to arrest for a civil citation, not a criminal charge. Speeding. Right. Or operating while suspended or whatever. Are you saying that every time someone is pulled over for speeding, law enforcement can go through someone's personal cell phone, look up all the pictures, the videos, the phone numbers, and receive calls?
Absolutely not. That's why this proposition has these conditions that Gantt basically has put on the search incident to arrest in the vehicle scenario. Same thing here. I'm suggesting substitute cell phone for vehicle. Don't use the container rationale. Actually, most courts have said you could search a cell phone incident to arrest for any crime. That's the general proposition that most courts have used. I'm suggesting don't do that. That probably goes too far. I'm saying you have to have either an arrest or probable cause to arrest and believe that that cell phone is going to contain evidence of a crime that you have probable cause to arrest for, like a drug offense. If this was just a speeding offense and he has this, happens to have a cell phone, you couldn't do this. The fact that he has this additional information about the nature of the cell phone and what may be on it is what gives him the entrance into the warrantless scrolling through the photo menu of the cell phone as a search incident. Just like in Gantt, suppose the cell phone were in the vehicle and he sees the marijuana blunt photo in plain view on the cell phone. It's on the seat. He leaves that on the seat, comes out and sees that. I'm suggesting there that would satisfy Gantt because you have that probable cause to believe that that cell phone contains evidence of a crime, drug activity. And because of that, you can use the search incident to arrest to examine that. You have to have either the arrest for that crime that you're looking for on that cell phone. You have to have probable cause for that. Or you have to have, even if you're arresting for some other offense, I mean, suppose you had just said here, I'm arresting you for speeding, but I've got the cell phone here that shows you with this marijuana blunt. That would give him the entree to search, warrantless search of that cell phone, because he has probable cause to believe the cell phone contains evidence of illegal drug activity.
May I ask, it's a little unusual, isn't it, that you find the cell phone?
Oh.
Okay. Let us say that someone is arrested for drug dealing. What may the officer do right then and there with a closed cell phone?
The arrest is for drug dealing. The person is in possession of a cell phone. If it's an officer like the officer in this case, and he has information that cell phones are used in drug trafficking, I'm not sure if, without having actually seen, like you did here, that photo of the marijuana, that would allow the search incident to arrest in that scenario just because he has the cell phone. I think here you've got this unique situation. I'm not 100% sure of that answer, that you couldn't search the cell phone, but I think it's a tougher call, because I don't know if you can say that that cell phone necessarily is going to be connected with drug dealing. You probably are going to have more circumstances about the nature of the drug dealing. If, for example, that officer knew as part of the probable cause of the drug dealing that he's used the cell phone in the past, then I think you have a different scenario. You have to probably have more entree than just what you're describing. Here you've got the photo. Another situation you might have that somebody's been surveilling him using the cell phone, or that type of scenario.
Well, the probable cause from the photo is to think he's a user. And you get past that with the officer's experience, right?
That's what we've got here, right?
That's the only thing you got.
That's correct.
To get him into a drug dealer.
That's correct.
You might have had him coming out of a house that's known to traffic in drugs. Would that be enough to open that cell phone?
I think that would go further, yes. Uh-huh. I think here you have one other indicia, although I don't think it's probably a make or break one, and that is that, as you indicated at the outset, they were investigating this car and this residence for connection to an armed robbery. The fact that it's an armed robbery, at least suggests that this defendant may have possession to the officer, that this defendant may be armed. They didn't find any weapons, at least the record doesn't indicate that, but at least the fact that you've got that additional consideration, and of course the case law has suggested that's an additional tie-in, that when you've got illegal drug suspicion, that it goes hand in hand quite often with weapons.
And I thought the U.S. Supreme Court overturned that, are saying, hey, if there's money and there's a gun, you can infer sale of drugs. The court said, no, you need individualized suspicion for probable cause or reasonable suspicion in
surely,
these cases.
Surely. And you have to... this is just one additional factor is what I'm saying. I mean, if that's all you had, you're right. I'm saying here you've got the photo on the cell phone, the officer's experience, and you can throw in the fact that here they were investigating an armed robbery. So it's a make weight, it's additional information, and like I said, I don't think it makes or breaks the analysis.
1 to 10, how heavy is the make weight?
Pardon?
From 1 to 10, how heavy is the make weight?
I'll give you a 5 on it, maybe, or a 4. Because it wasn't developed. It wasn't developed in this case in fairness. I mean, we don't know. There wasn't any gun found. If there had been a gun found, then I think on his person, for example, or in the car, then you've got not only the cell phone and the experience about this is what drug traffickers do with their cell phones, but you've got, then, you know, this guy probably is a dealer if you've got a weapon on top. I mean, it's an additional factor then. So.
You're relying on an arrest. Suppose there was no arrest here.
And, right, for the search incident, you need the arrest.
Right.
For the first proposition and the one that the Court of Appeals relied on, you don't need the arrest, although they did talk about it in terms of an arrest. My suggestion is they didn't need to go that far because based on the case United States versus Place, I'll see if I can give you the cite in my brief here quickly. Page 16 of my brief is the quote, and I'll read it because this is the legal proposition that underlies the search warrant analysis, or at least one of the steps in the analysis. The quote is this: where law enforcement authorities have probable cause to believe that a container holds contraband or evidence of a crime, here a cell phone, evidence of drug activity, but have not secured a warrant, the court has interpreted the Fourth Amendment to permit seizure of the property pending issuance of a warrant to examine its contents if the exigencies of the situation demand it, or some other recognized exception to the warrant requirement is present. Here, as I've suggested, you have probable cause to believe that this container is
what,
a cell phone.
What is it that gave you probable cause? Just this photo?
No, primarily the photo, but as you just suggested earlier, the experience of the officer that this type of photo is what drug traffickers typically do with their cell phones. Cell phones are used in illegal drug activity, but in the fact that this guy not only has a cell phone with a photo of him smoking marijuana, but this is the type of thing that drug dealers typically do. We're talking probable cause here. We're not talking sufficient evidence to convict necessarily. Probable cause, at least, and this is in this context, it's probable cause to keep that cell phone, to have that cell phone in the officer's possession, so that when the phone rings and it keeps ringing, and eventually they decide that he's going to answer it, that's legitimate for that officer to have both retained that cell phone and answered that call.
And if the suspect is handcuffed in the back of the squad car, the officer has possession of the cell phone, what's the harm of getting a warrant? Why not have a warrant required?
You're right. Other than in this scenario, and if it were the search incident to arrest scenario or just probable cause and exigent circumstances, a different warrant exception scenario, then I think you're right. I think here, though, where we're talking about information that's derived from answering the phone call, possessing that phone and answering the phone call is different than scrolling through the menu.
Yes.
Scrolling through the menu isn't necessary for that warrant, for that warrant search or the warrant analysis that I'm articulating.
Well, how about a warrant requirement for everything but answering the phone? Because even your opposing counsel seemed to acknowledge in passing that if the phone call isn't answered, it's obvious, then that is by definition evanescent evidence. And here the officer answered one out of four calls, if my memory of the record is accurate. Why not a warrant requirement for everything but answering the phone?
I think because although this record doesn't reflect it, I think there are scenarios where the information on the cell phone, including that picture, that photo in plain view, as well as any other additional information that turned out to be on the phone, could be lost if, for example, they had the remote capacity to get rid of that.
The poison pill.
The poison pill.
And if it's not part of the record in this case, though, how is this case affected?
Right. You cannot use it in this case. I don't disagree with that. But I'm suggesting in this case that for the search warrant scenario, you don't have to worry about that because what we're talking about here is the only information that's critical in the warrant. Excise the scrolling through the thing is the answering the phone call. And, you know, answering the phone call, you don't know, if he's a seller, well, then you've missed the opportunity to, this person may go to another seller then. If he's a buyer, of course, then you lose the opportunity to identify the seller. So that's, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I didn't want to cut you short. Thank you. What am I missing here? Why isn't it that the answering of a phone call gives you probable cause to get a warrant? They got a warrant. why is it, it's not that simple, but why isn't it that simple?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure that I'm following.
Probably because I'm missing something. It seems as though there is an agreement, maybe I'm stretching, there's an agreement that you can, that answering the phone call, if there's an arrest, answering the phone call isn't a problem. You have, under the theory of exigent circumstances and destruction of evidence. That's what I recall when I was preparing this, that both sides cited cases for that premise. So if answering the phone call gave them the information that was sufficient for probable cause to get a warrant, and they did get a warrant, even if, let's say, the scrolling activity is a problem. Why isn't the probable cause based on the answering of the phone call good enough here? Why don't you win on that? But it seems more complex, and I'm missing something.
Well, the phone call, one thing we don't know precisely when the phone call came in, other than that it was on the same night. So I don't know, for example, if it was contemporaneous with possessing the phone in the car. The answering the phone call is the hearing the information from the drug dealer. That information contained in the warrant affidavit, I'm arguing by itself, is sufficient to get the warrant.
Yes.
The warrant then gets you to see all the photos in the menu.
So that's the way. And so why is there all this other argument? I must be missing something, because that doesn't seem. I must be missing something. What am I missing?
Put another way, what evidence is requested to be suppressed? Is it the evidence that you got from the search warrant? Or is it evidence that you got before the search warrant that is being suppressed? That, I think, is...
Yeah, that's right, because if it's the evidence you got as a result of a search warrant that was based on the probable cause of this drug call, which sounded to me like probable cause that some, you know, I'm making an order for whatever the lingo was. So if you have a valid warrant, is there a problem with the information obtained from that warrant?
The only problem in the warrant, as I see it, is the initial act or the earlier act of scrolling through.
Yeah. So assuming that's illegal, so assuming you can't use any of that stuff.
Right.
Bad, bad, bad.
Right.
The warrant's not good.
Yeah. What makes the warrant that was obtained after the scrolling and was obtained based on the probable cause of answering the phone call in a bad warrant, or the information obtained as a result of that warrant, bad?
Yeah, I'm arguing that the warrant is the basis. That's what the Court of Appeals held.
Yeah.
If I'm understanding what you're asking.
Yeah, that's right. So there's lots of other arguments, but why?
Yeah, I mean, the search incident to arrest argument was the focus in the trial court. And I think you have two equally valid arguments. The one that won the day in the Court of Appeals, if you will, for the state, was the warrant argument that's based on the phone call. And that doesn't depend on an arrest. That doesn't depend on the warrantless scrolling, because that's excised. That's perhaps the cleanest and the simplest, and the one that the Court of Appeals.
The other argument that you're making, the one that's based on Scalia's
concurrence, yes.
You know, I mean, why do you even need to go there? I remember circling.
Well, it isn't necessary. It's an alternative argument in case for some reason you didn't agree with the Court of Appeals analysis. I also wanted to take the opportunity, because the case is before this court, to articulate what the state believes should be an analysis when you don't have a warrant, when you have a search incident to arrest of a cell phone, so that you don't get the general exploratory type search for any kind of arrest, but you have to have the circumstances that are basically like the circumstance in Gant, although we're not talking about a vehicle search, we're talking about a search of a cell phone. The nature of the cell phone, as counsel articulated, is such, just like a laptop computer might be, that you've got to have, when you're going to do a search incident to arrest, you've got to have the arrest, but then you need that additional probable cause to believe that that cell phone or that laptop computer has evidence of a crime that the person has been arrested for or for which the arresting officer has probable cause. That's the Scalia concurrence. And it's an alternative argument. It's my second argument. So
which argument do you like the best?
Well, I think the search warrant argument is the cleanest argument. I think the one that the Court of Appeals articulated. The only departure I would make from the Court of Appeals analysis is arrest is fine as far as the reason for having the officer in possession of the cell phone at the moment that the call comes in, and that call is the basis for the warrant or the key. You don't necessarily need that under United States versus Place if you've got probable cause and exigent circumstances as a substitute for the arrest for the reason that the cell phone is in that officer's possession at that moment when that call, he decides to answer that call.
So if I understand your argument is you can eliminate arrest, detained for civil traffic violation. In plain view, the officers see a photo of what they believe, rightly or wrongly, is possession and use of a controlled substance, right? The photo. As a result of the photo, you got him in possession of drugs. The officer's experience is that dealers put their photos on their cell phone. So now there's probable cause to believe that he's a dealer. And if you want to add to that, make weight, you say he was seen at a place associated, at least under surveillance, for armed robbery, and we all know that dealers have guns. And so you put the photo of him smoking, plus the experience that dealers individualize or their phone, and the armed robbery, and that's probable cause to believe that he's a dealer. Then they go with that evidence, they go and get a search warrant, then they look at the photo array they got on the search warrant, and that's good enough. What have I missed?
There are two things. There's the warrantless scrolling that occurs before they get the warrant, and there's also answering the call that occurs before they get the warrant.
And the answering the call gives them probable cause to think he's a dealer. But how can they look at the scrolling?
Do they
have right to scroll?
The scrolling in this situation, right, for the scrolling to be okay, be proper, it would have to be, as far as I can tell, under a search incident to arrest rationale.
But we're not doing it that way.
If you don't have an arrest, then I don't think you have a legitimate basis to go through the cell phone.
Well, then they didn't have a legitimate basis to scroll, but now they get a search warrant and scroll. Isn't that tainted?
Right. To that extent it is. That's why the critical component of the search warrant application is the answering of the call ordering cocaine.
Well, that eliminates the taint.
Well, when you have a search warrant that has taint and untaint, you get rid of the taint and then look to see is that untaint still good enough, probable cause to get the warrant.
And that's the state's theory.
That's the one that the Court of Appeals followed. That's the first argument.
And that's the one you want us to follow?
I think that's the cleanest argument here. I think when you get into search incident to arrest analysis, you're getting into uncharted waters, if you will. Although I think, as I argued in the brief, and I've tried to survey that case law that's evolving on this, I think an analysis that sort of dovetails or parallels the Arizona Gantt vehicle search incident arrest makes some sense when you're talking about a cell phone. A similar type of, where you've got to have discrete reasons amounting you have to have the arrest, of course, and the probable cause to believe that that cell phone has got evidence related either to the crime of arrest or to a crime for which there's probable cause to arrest.
When I'm hearing your search warrant argument, it seems almost like a reverse inevitable discovery doctrine. Because typically you have the evidence, and you've got the evidence, and boy, you know, we shouldn't have done it at that time, but we would have discovered it anyway, so it was inevitable that we would have lawfully obtained this evidence. Your argument is almost a reverse inevitable discovery in that, yeah, we got the evidence first, but never mind that we got it then, because we had enough later to get the search warrant, so what we really want to hang our hat on is the evidence we obtained as a result of the search warrant.
Well, I think
the one piece of information instead of the five pieces of information.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think chronologically what happens here is the officer thought it was okay to do this, scrolling through the menu. The question is then he did additional things, getting a warrant, for example, that included additional things happened. And I'm presuming here that the call came in after the scrolling because there's nothing in the record to say that he got the call, for example, on the order for cocaine before the scrolling. But so the reason it comes out that way, I think, is just because of the way things happen to evolve factually in this particular case.
Well, this Court of Appeals said that he was under arrest.
Sure, instead of the United States versus... the arrest in the first analysis, the warrant analysis, arrest comes into play, either arrest or, as I argued, probable cause and exigent circumstances to answer the phone call. That's the critical component there, why he's in possession of that phone at that time. The Court of Appeals decided that because he was arrested, it was permissible for the police to have possession of that cell phone at the time that call came in. I can articulate, although the brief does, and I see my time's up, but all the indicia of arrest, I think, are present here, although the case law says that handcuffing alone might not be, or weapon drawing might not be standing alone, or secured in the back of a car might not be, or multiple officers might not be. Here you've got this constellation of factors, all of them present. I think anybody in the position of Mr. Carroll here would have considered themselves to be under arrest.
When did they give him his Miranda rights?
Pardon?
When did they give him his Miranda rights?
I don't know that the record talks about that. I don't know that there was a statement taken, so that's the best.
Well, the Court of Appeals didn't just base it on the fact of arrest. They based it on the circumstances leading up to the arrest,
correct,
including the picture.
Correct.
I want to explore if a person is arrested as a drug dealer, or as a drug possessor, they have a closed cell phone in their possession. May the police answer their calls? I can understand them taking the cell phone, but without seeing that picture,
right?
I
think that's a tough question because I think it depends on what the information is that has led to the conclusion that he's a drug dealer or she's a drug dealer. Because I think that information might inform whether or not that cell phone is going to be, as I suggest under the search incident to arrest limitation here, whether that cell phone is going to be connected to that, to illegal drug dealing. I think if you've got, I mean, here we've got obviously this unique situation of the photo and the information and experience that's what drug dealers do. Put that as wallpaper or put these on their cell phone. If you don't have that and you don't, you know, you probably have some other information, obviously, that he's a drug dealer. If it included use of a cell phone at some point in the surveillance, for example, then I would suggest that if that cell phone is ringing, that officer could, incident to an arrest for drug dealing, answer that phone. But in response to your reaction, I haven't thought that one through. And I don't hold me to that. Don't hold me to that one because I, You know, if you actually, if you know, if you'd like, I'd certainly be willing to, you know, supplement, you know, additionally in writing if you'd like for that proposition. But I just haven't thought about that, thought through that enough. But I think my analysis probably is going to be what I said. But I better stop.
Good excuse. Thank you, Council.
Thank you,
Mr. Gould.
I'd like to go back to Justice Bradley's observations about, well, we've got this cell phone call, and you know the warrant's based on that cell phone call, and so what's the problem? That's, I mean, that's essentially the Court of Appeals rationale. Mm-hmm. I would take issue with that because the answering of the cell phone call. I mean, if the state is conceding it follows, it's following after the scrolling, and if the scrolling is a problem, that brings up just the problem that was identified by Justice Ziegler, in that, you know, when you have the independent source doctrine, it's sources that were discovered before the problematic search, as in Murray versus United States, where they had plenty of evidence that this warehouse was, you know, which is in it's in my reply brief on page 2. I didn't really discuss the facts heavily, but they went into a warehouse. They saw some stuff in plain view that they thought might be bales of marijuana. They went out. They got a warrant based on all the stuff they had done up until that point. They didn't disturb anything, and that was an independent source. But in this case, we've got the officer going through the photo gallery of the cell phone, seeing all this stuff that, sure, that does indicate that Mr. Carroll's a drug dealer, and then they're answering a phone call thinking, hey, he's a drug dealer. I mean, drug dealers are using their phones for that. So that wasn't really an independent source. That's a source that follows on the what I would argue is the initial illegality. So that cell phone call is answering that cell phone call, intercepting that call is a big problem. And I would also like to bring up, I think that the state's sort of analogizing the search of the cell phone to the search of the car, going to Scalia's concurrence, and again, that's a little too much of a stretch. I mean, a car is much different than a cell phone. The cell phone holds a universe of private information, some of which may be criminal, but other stuff that may not be criminal. And the state has not articulated a compelling reason why they need to search it right now and why they don't need to take the cell phone, hold on to it, and go get a warrant, as they eventually did anyway. And so I don't think that what they discovered as a result of the warrant, which is really what they already saw, had already seen already. I mean, they didn't. It wasn't a warrant to search his house. It was a warrant to search the same phone and the same pictures that he had already seen. I mean, he may not have looked at every single one of them, but essentially he saw pictures of drugs and money and guns, which they eventually concluded they didn't charge him with drugs because they couldn't probably prove that what that stuff was drugs, but if he has a handgun and he has a, you know, prior, then they can charge him with that. So that's a big problem, and it's also a big problem to just make the leap from possession to drug dealing, because all they knew when he started scrolling was that he was a probable drug user.
Counsel, just so I'm clear on the record, the picture that gets your client into trouble on the possession charge that we're looking at today is only in the part of the cell phone that he leafed through, the gallery that he leafed through prior to getting the warrant. Is that correct?
Well, the picture of him smoking the blunt is on the screen.
No, I'm not worried about that. I'm looking at the possession of a firearm by a felon. That's the way he's charged with. And
right. That, and, okay. We don't know if he saw the specific photograph that they're relying on, but he said there were pictures in the affidavit. He indicated there were pictures of guns.
Right, right. You know. But just let me put it to you this way. If I buy part of your argument that he shouldn't have scrolled, okay, and I buy part of Mr. Framus' argument that they had enough to get a warrant, okay, just because I looked at the affidavit, I think there's enough to get a warrant. If there's a picture both places in the gallery of the photos that he saw before, and a picture further into the phone where he didn't look before, you're kind of stuck a little bit, aren't you?
Well, we don't know for sure, but let's assume he didn't see that actual picture.
Okay.
I don't,
all right. Okay.
What you're assuming.
So it's a warrant. You have to have the warrant not be okay, or you're in difficulties with your client. I mean, your position doesn't prevail here unless the warrant is not okay.
That's right.
Okay, so you can't identify that it was just the scrolling that got the charge of possession of a firearm by a felon. There may have been information gained after the warrant issued which also supported that. Is that right?
Well, from the phone itself, yes.
Right, but some perhaps before and some perhaps after the warrant issued, correct?
Possibly. We just don't have enough information to know what the picture was, whether he's seen that picture or not.
Whose obligation is to show the warrant is tainted?
I'm sorry?
Whose obligation is it to show that the warrant is tainted?
Well, I'm not sure. The warrant would be presumptively reasonable, so I would say that it is Mr. Carroll's burden to show that the warrant was tainted.
From the prior review of the photo gallery, which you say was illegal.
Yes, and the answering of the phone as well.
So what are you suppressing? The evidence from the warrant? Is that what your motion is to suppress?
Yes, the evidence that was seized as a result of the warrant. Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I want to thank Attorneys Gould and Primus for yet another suppression, but in a very different context, and giving us cell phones to think about. That ends our hearing in 07AP1378CR, Stakes v. Carroll. Court's in recess until September 18th, when we have another oral argument.